Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. I've got my good buddy here, Rollo Tomasi. I was just telling him this morning, I was doing some research for a whiteboard video on the World Economic Forum and kind of this Malthusian worldview. And I came across a couple things. I said, man, Rollo would be the perfect guy to ask these questions to and get some insights. So he was nice enough to come on and discuss these questions live with you, and I'm really excited to dive into them. So first and foremost, Rollo, thanks for being here, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, man. Much appreciated.
Yeah, so I might have a few viewers who don't know who you are. Could you want to just explain that and maybe kind of the Reader's Digest version? If I had to say, you know, Rollo Tomasi is the foremost expert in, like, how would you finish that sentence?
Intersexual dynamics, I think, is probably the best way to describe what I do. Are you in Colombia? I think I talked to Robert Kiyosaki. He said you were in Colombia.
Yeah. I'm in Medellin right now. He texted me the other day, not to go off on too much of a tangent here, and he said that you and him might be doing something at ASU.
Yeah.
I was in town to swing by, and I said, man, I'd love to swing by and help you guys out.
But yeah.
I'm out of the country.
I am. So I'm Rollo Tomasi. I'm the author of the Rational Male series of books, soon to be five, by the way. Fifth book comes out probably first week of April now. Simply because of exactly what you're just saying a minute ago, I'm going to be down in Phoenix with Robert Kiyosaki on my birthday, by the way, which is April 2nd. And yeah. And then so it's funny because it turned into, it was like a birthday party and just sort of a gathering of, like, you know, just some guys to hang out. And now it's like, hey, can you talk to 20 people? They're like, sure. Why not? Let's
do it. It always does that with Kiyosaki.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm talking to some people.
Kenny's going
to
be there too, isn't he? McElroy?
Yeah. Kenny is going to be there. I turned it into a week, right? So I'm going to be down there. I'm hopefully going to go on with Kenny. I'll probably go on Rich Dad Podcast or Rich Dad Podcast. Radio. Yeah, radio. That's it. So I'll be there and I will be talking with some people from, I believe, from ASU. And then I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but possibly PragerU as well. I'm not really sure, but we'll see.
Yeah. Kenny was telling me about that. I was talking to him and Hartman on Saturday and he was saying something about PragerU.
Yeah. Cool. So
I wish I was
looking, I'm actually, you know, it kind of went from just sort of this, you know, let's just hang out and have a dinner or something into a week long thing. And now it's, you know, I'm all about it. So it's gonna be cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll definitely plug that on my social media when we get closer to it. That sounds really, really cool. But on today's topic, Rollo, I want to just do a screen share and go over to, I'll probably start with this tweet that I sent out because that kind of summarizes everything. And how much do you follow the World Economic Forum?
A lot, actually. More so now than before. Certainly after the last Rebel Capitalist that was in Houston. Yeah. And I would not call myself an economic wonk, for lack of a better word, but certainly in how it crosses over into my wheelhouse, which is intersexual dynamics. And like I said, like back in I think it was in Houston, I did that one, like, a couple hour workshop at your event. And so now I'm starting to see the crossover.
Yeah. And I know Rich has been talking about this too. I saw a couple videos he did the other day, but so it's kind of teeing that up for the conversation. What I've always believed that the World Economic Forum, they're for the most part Malthusian, and Thomas, I think his name is Malthus, is the way you pronounce it correctly. He had this worldview that the population was increasing exponentially, and that since we're living in a world of limited resources, that something's got to give, and he proposed controlling the population, among many other things, which you kind of hear this reiterated in kind of a friendly way throughout the World Economics Great Reset agenda.
For sure.
So what was interesting is in 1973, one of the first World Economic Forum events they had, Klaus Schwab started in 1971, that an individual there that started something called the Club of Rome. And the Club of Rome had this paper that basically talked about kind of Malthus, his teachings. That was pretty much the premise of it, saying that, you know, we need to control the population. We've got this problem. They mentioned this in the 1800s. Now it's coming to fruition to today. And I think this really shaped the worldview of a lot of the global elite we have today.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And this is the idea that we will have such a population explosion. This was like really popularized in the 70s, I think was what you're saying. Such a population explosion that human consumption will outstrip the ability to, for the resources of the planet to sort of support that many people on planet Earth.
Yeah, so basically you were right on the correct path there, that the human consumption get to a level that outstrips the resources. Therefore, we've either got to reduce the human population or we've got to reduce the level of consumption. And so now I want to move over to this this tweet. So this is this idea that he had on how we could limit the population. So he called it, it's kind of bizarre wording, but he had it positive checks on human growth. And this would be based on increasing the death rate. So he saw the way to do this was through hunger, disease, and war. Pretty horrific stuff, but that's how he outlined it. And then the other thing was the preventative checks. And this was how we prevent the, or we lower the birth rate. So you got one way, one handle here is increasing the death rate, and the other one is lowering the birth rate.
Right.
So the things he proposed, birth control, postponement of marriage, and celibacy.
Right.
So especially when I was thinking through postponement of marriage, I mean, pretty much every single one of your videos, along with Rich, was the first thing that popped into my mind. And you know, the way we've been kind of trying to enlighten, let's say, the population, pretty much everything leads to women and men being married a lot later in life, if at all. And if women are marrying later in life, that means they're having fewer kids. And this goes right back to this idea. And then I thought, okay, well, if we connect the dots, maybe this is being pushed by the World Economic Forum. And that's what I wanted to get your thoughts on initially. Then I wanted to get your thoughts on the celibacy issue, because talking about, you know, beta males, as an example, we know that in the past, let's say 20 years, and especially the last, I'd say 10 years, that more and more of the male population has been kind of weeded out of the gene pool. And you can go over why that happens a lot better than I can. But then that, in my view, that leads to more celibacy, which goes right back to kind of this worldview of Malthus and the World Economic Forum. So I'm trying to connect those dots. And, you know, maybe it's nothing, but I'm just trying to think it through and try to figure out the incentives here. So the first question would be, I'm trying to figure out from your standpoint, because you do so much research here, what type of narrative has the mainstream media and society and the entertainment business pushed over the last two decades, maybe more specifically in the last 5 years, that would lead to people being married later and therefore the birth rate going down? Because I want to try to understand that to see if we can connect the dots to the World Economic Forum, their Great Reset agenda, or if this is something that's not connected in any way, shape, or form.
Sure. Okay. Let me start by this. I've talked about, it's funny you should bring this up, because yesterday, I mean, I didn't dedicate the whole show to it, but people in the chat are already saying I did probably a good 45 minutes on the new male birth control pill that's being, I guess there's human trials now that they've got past, like the mice trials or whatever. And I don't know exactly what I'm, like I said, I'm not a chemist. I don't know, or endocrinologist. I don't know any, you know, what the hard details are about that, but it looks like they're moving it past like sort of animal trials. And now they're going to actually try it on actual live human males, I presume. And so when people ask me about the, you know, male birth control, it's usually in terms of like society, like what's the impact going to be, going forward. And the only frame of reference that I think that we have is really the birth control pill that was really hormonal birth control that was released for women back in about 1965, I believe, is where mid-60s. Right. Yeah. And we had to look. And so I've done on my fourth book, which is called Religion. There's a section in there on marriage, it's on sex and all this other stuff. But I go back to 1965. And if you go back there and you look at where all of these trends start their uptick or their downtick, depending on where it is. If you look at like the decline in marriage, if you look at the rise in divorce, and then it peaked right around the mid-70s, and then it dropped off with the rate of marriage dropping off. Right. So it was like right after hormonal birth control was released. And you have to remember that when it was first released, and it still is technically to this day, it is a unilaterally female-controlled birth control. When what had happened in human history, as the first time in human history, we have put the birthing process or the reproductive process in the hands of only one sex, and that is human females at this point. Some people have brought up and said have brought up the eugenics word, saying that, you know, women are the ones who are technically, whether they realize it or not, involving themselves in kind of like an unwitting eugenics. Like, this is if you give them free rein and you take men out of that equation, where do we end up? What happens after that? And I think we found out. So we had the sexual revolution, we had the free love movement, we had the boomer generation, we had Woodstock, right? And we had, you know, Studio 54 and key parties and swingers and widely available pornography. We had, you know, and with every technological advance, we found some way to sort of like compound all of that. So if you look at the rise in divorce, you look at the drop in marriage, you look at no-fault divorce, you look at Roe versus Wade, you look at on-demand abortion, safe legal abortion, right? Safe legal and rare is now celebrated. And like, it's like a point of pride for a woman to have an abortion in the 21st century. But we have to go all the way back to 1965, right around the advent of hormonal birth control, to see all of this stuff that Malthusian, theory, I guess, has already sort of accounted for. So yes, for population control, it's not just about warfare, and it's kind of difficult to have like real mass wars these days, like in like World War I or World War II. And if you look at the attrition rate and you saw how the population was decreased, say just in World War I, and was the first real human war where we had the entire world involved, and it was war and death on an industrial scale. And I don't think we were really ready for it at that time. But then, of course, World War II rolls around. And that's also another, let's just say, a buffer on the human population. Well, now we have nuclear weapons, and we still have war, of course, but we don't have it on the scale that we had in the worldwide scale like we had before. So how can we implement ways for population control that aren't going to involve annihilating the entire human race, right? So you most definitely have birth control. That's first and foremost. And look at the fertility rates of countries today. And you look at those and you compare those data points against other data points, such as the decline in marriage or the rate of first marriage. So in the United States, it's right around 30 for men, and it's right about 28 to 29 for women. If you go into Western Europe, it's even later than that. It's like the early to mid 30s for rate of first marriage. And then you look at the rate of first birth in those countries, and then you can see the population control effect on those populations. And the net result is a lower than replacement level fertility rate in those countries. Meanwhile, you have certainly in Central and Western Europe, importing refugees from other countries to sort of to fill in the blank right there, to fill in the population of those countries. So the only place that I would have any kind of disagreement, but I would ask questions about is if we're going to decrease population to the point where we're below fertility rates in certain countries, what is the logic in bringing in refugees and bringing in people from outside the country and integrating them into the European Union, or in the case of the United States, bringing people more and more mass immigration as a result of that? So there's certain populations that are declining and there's other populations that are increasing quite a bit. But by and large, overall, depending on the culture, depending on the quote unquote tribe, the people who are coming in have a higher replacement level than others. And I think maybe the better place to look is there some sort of selection process that's going on as a result of that? Is it also the result of more feminized, more gynocentric governmental practices? I brought this
up. That's what I'm trying to get at, Rolo.
Yeah, and then I knew that's where you wanted to go with this. Now, here's the other thing. And just before I'll finish with this. When I was at Rebel Capitalist in Houston, I brought this up. There's a really great article of, I think it was from last year. It was on Zero Hedge. And the writer, and I can't remember his name, but he was talking about how, 16 of the top like first world countries, like the economies of those countries are run by women. So if you go and you look at, and then also the central, yeah. The banks, like if you look at the ECF, you look at the IMF, you look at the World Trade Organization, you look at all that, they are all run by females. And I asked this of the people who I was doing the workshop with, I says, what does the world look like and what do governments look like when they have a feminist or a gynocentric, either a leader or the economics that, you know, the Treasury Secretary is a female. I know Janet Yellen's not part of the Fed now, but like she used to be. And we used to have this, you know, we have this understanding, we have this idea that women in some way are better with the purse strings than men are. And then in the same breath are just like, you probably saw this too, because I retweeted this, but Elizabeth Warren is out there tweeting about like how we need to have like student debt forgiveness right now, because Biden never came around with that. Yeah, that was one of his campaign promises, but it was a very popular part of his platform when he was running, because 2/3 of student debt in the United States is held by women. $1.7 trillion in outstanding student debt, and 2/3 of that is held by women. So it stands to reason that they would say, oh yeah, we'd love to forgive all your debt, because now we have women who just basically get a free education as a result of that. That's, I think, is part of the symptom of women running or having a more communitarian style of running economies and running governments.
Yeah. And so then taking that back to the global elite, you know, a lot of their messaging revolves around climate change, but a lot of their messaging revolves around equality. And and I guess to use your phrase, like a gynocentric form of government. Now, I don't think they come out and explicitly say this, but implicitly through their objectives, you can see this is kind of the direction they're going. So I don't want to sit here and say whether, you know, that's good or bad. Like everything in life, there's a cost benefit analysis and there's trade-offs. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's just assume that there's some things about having a gynocentric type of government or having women in charge that is good. Mm-hmm. But we've got to look at, OK, what's the trade off there? And I think the trade off is that the birth rates are going to be lower, because it's just a matter of fact that mm-hmm. women can't have children past a certain age. Mm-hmm. So if they delay this because they want to get into government, or they want to be Janet Yellen, as an example, mm-hmm. or Christine Lagarde or something like that, they're going to have to make sacrifices. That's just mm-hmm. the way the world works. And it seems like that sacrifice could come at the expense of having children, which yes. might play into what the World Economic Forum wants to minimize moving forward. You mm-hmm. see, that's kind of where I'm going. So mm-hmm. if you and I were running the World Economic Forum, let's say, and mm-hmm. we sat there and said, okay, how can we lower the birth rate? We would say, we want to push this narrative to mm-hmm. to the fullest of our ability, because if we're able to integrate this into global economies and governments, then we know that 20, 30 years down the road, that the birth rate's going to be lower.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, the reason why I bring that up, and I brought this up when I was doing my workshop in Houston, is it was to point out the fact that I think that there is still this popularized conception that there's some sort of nebulous evil patriarchy out there that is controlling everything. You were talking about the wage gap and everything else. And I think that not enough people are aware of just how, like, it's not about earning. It's about who is in control of the spending and where does that go and how is that allocated. And so I started from this perspective, is that, you know, governments run by women are going to be run from a perspective that women have. So when you look at communitarianism or you look at egalitarianism, that's why things like a communitarian style of government is different from the way that men would run that government, or the way they would allocate funds for certain projects. So if it's education, or if it's healthcare, the environment, that kind of stuff. Really, you can trace that back to how men and women govern or how they spend. So like for men, it's much more hierarchical. for women, it's much more egalitarian. And so we have to take that into account, because as soon as women get into positions of political power or socioeconomic power, what they do is they use that in the, like, just how women would naturally use that, right? Well, we want to be empowered. We want to have more college educated women, which we're already seeing right now, where we have, it's a 60-40 split at major universities right now when it comes to college enrollment. So you've got 60% women, you got 40% men. That's one of the things that's really kind of stressing out a lot of these guys who are in sort of these TradCon, traditional conservative, pundits that you see talking about the crisis of masculinity and men need to man up. Well, the problem is we have to look at it from both sides of the equation. You can't just say men, take more responsibility. We also have to see what is disincentivizing them to not take that responsibility in the first place. So when we look at all of these entitlements and we look at all of the way that women run a country and where they, or the economy for that matter, where they allocate that stuff, it ends up into like more egalitarian like organizations, more egalitarian issues and special interests and stuff like that. But you also have to look at that in terms of, well, if we're going to empower women and we want to make them sort of the decision makers or the people who are going to direct the course of our country, when we say we want to empower them, that message kind of goes against female biology, like you were saying before. So how do we see that this is in evidence? Well, we see this by lower birth rates. We see it by women postponing marriage, just as you were saying in that tweet right there. You see birth control. Now we're going to have birth control for men. What's that going to do to the fertility rate? That's what I was trying to answer on my show yesterday. If you go and you look at how do they do this, right? How do you do this? Through social initiatives, through social imperatives, through saying, well, we need to lift women up. It's what I call the fempowerment narrative. It's like we have to empower women. We have to lift them up. We have to find everything we can possibly do to put all of our social interests into one sex and one gender, because men have had it for so long and now it's women's turn to take over the driver's seat right now. How do we do that? Well, it comes with that empowerment comes at a price. Because women's biology is different from men's biology. So they've got to know. So what do we see now? We see anything that will in any way convince women that their sexual market value or their reproductive years are going to be evergreen. We will find ways to do that. So consequently, you see things like egg freezing right now. That is a benefit. Part of the benefits packages for like major corporations right now. So if you're a woman who wants to focus on her career and you can't find the right guy, or you're building a business or building whatever it is that you're doing, that's the advertising. But the net result of that is we're going to freeze your eggs so that when you get to be 40 or 50 years old, you'll still be able to have babies later on, and you can have you can have it all, baby. And seriously, that is like, it's not only is that dangerous, but it also drops the fertility rate over the course of decades.
Right. And that's what I was trying to get at is if you're a group that's pushing that narrative, it could be that you're just trying to push the narrative to improve, quote unquote, equality. But it also could be because your downstream objective is really to reduce the birth rate. And that's what I'm really trying to get at. Well,
I'm looking at the chat real here, and Lori's saying something about like the divorce rate is 50%. Yes, it is. But you also have to look at right now, the marriage rate is as low as it has ever been since they started recording it back in the 1800s. It is now at 5.1 per 1,000 people in the United States. It has never been lower, because we have completely, my good friend Aaron Clary calls it this, we live in a post-marriage society right now. And it's not that marriage isn't a great idea, it's just that we can't make it work in a legalistic sense right now. So yes, we have a 50% divorce rate. Yes, we have a 5.1 per 1,000 marriage rate right now. And we don't want to, like, we see the symptoms, but we don't want to see what the cause of the disease is.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with Macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level.
Now let's move on to the celibacy thing. And I think it's, you know, back in Thomas Malthus, I think he was trying to impose the idea of voluntary celibacy. And I, what's weird is I watched a video going all the way back to, I think it was 1971 or 73 or so, when they used this MIT computer to basically take his ideas and project what the world would look like in 2000 and in 2020. And they kept referencing that the West and a lot of these large economies are going to have to move into a reduction in population by trying to encourage people to have fewer kids and actually be celibate. And so what's interesting is you talk a lot about how especially males might not be voluntarily celibate, but involuntarily celibate based on, you know, kind of what we've seen over the past 10 years. So can you expand on that further?
Right. Sure. I'll start with some more stats for you. If you go and you look at the general survey study, I believe it was 2018 or 2019. And you looked at, I believe it's 2018, between the years of 2008 and 2018 in that decade, men between the ages of 18 and 29 are basically sexless. And the percentage has gone up from to like, I think it was 28 or 30%. I think it's maybe even higher than that right now, meaning like they're still virgins, meaning like they're not even, you know, they're not going to reproduce. And when I talk about the issue of like incels or vol cells or whatever cells we're, you know, whatever cutesy word we're using right now, you have to look at it in terms of reproductive success or failure. Because when a man doesn't reproduce, he might as well be dead. So, I mean, from an evolutionary perspective, it's maybe not exactly like that, but I'm not saying, hey, go kill yourself. I'm just saying like that's from a hindbrain perspective for men. If they're not reproducing, they might as well be going extinct. So you have to take that into consideration, but also what is responsible for that uptick in celibacy? So a lot of people will say, well, it's the ease with which we can get online streaming free 4K pornography online. And that's what's keeping guys like from going into the clubs and actually, you know, doing something with themselves, because why bother, you know, going out and risking rejection and actually building yourself up to be anything more if there's no incentive or there's no reward for actually having sex? Because prior to the sexual revolution, that compromise, I mean, at least ideally, was that a guy had to get married in order to get to sex, and a woman had to get married in order to get to security or long-term security. Now we don't have those things anymore, because women can provide for themselves either through the state or through their own, you know, their careerism, you know, going to school, getting their money together, you know, being a boss babe kind of thing. So they can sort of cover the what we call the beta buck side of hypergamy, which is alpha seed and beta need, right? So you've got women who are now self-sufficient. They're strong, independent women, but they're independent of men. So they don't need men, but they want men. And the men that they don't want are the, you know, 18 to 29 year old guys from 2008 to 2018. And we can clearly see that that's the way, I mean, statistically speaking, that's the direction that we're going. Pornography, as I've said in the past, is a sedation for guys. It keeps you satisfied. The oxytocin keeps coming in. There's a biological aspect that goes along with that. There are a lot of ways that we sedate the young men of today, and not just in the United States, but in other first world countries. So if you look at pornography, if you look at immersive video games, if you look at the fact that we legalized marijuana not too long ago, if you look at the uptick in
the metaverse rollout,
that's coming
reality. I mean, that's the next
courtesy of another. Courtesy of a guy who has no business talking about reproduction, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is probably, you know, there's something wrong with that guy. But So that's a sedation. You look at these sedations like, was it prescription drug, like opioid abuse, right? Mm-hmm. Alcoholism, pornography, you know, marijuana, whatever else it is. And it doesn't eliminate guys' want for purpose. You listen to somebody like Dr. Jordan Peterson or even myself when we talk about like the Lost Boys generation, that generation, which is now two generations, is the product of really 30 or 40 years leading up to where we're at right now, where we've disincentivized men being men. We don't even know what a man is right now. We don't even know what a woman is right now. We talk about this transgender stuff that's going on. That's just a product of this impetus that's been really going on since, I think, probably the early 70s up to where we're at right now. So if you look at how we sedate men, it's not just sedating you from actually succeeding or becoming a, like quote unquote alpha male, right? It's not just preventing you from that. It's also removing you from the sexual marketplace. It's removing you from you being able to solve your reproductive problem. And from an overall, if we're going to look at the forest for the trees from a Malthusian perspective, yeah, having all of that is most definitely a way to control population. And what population is it controlling? The least motivated, the most frustrated, the most angst ridden guys. You know, that's one. Somebody told me this, that like during the Arab Spring, one of the reasons why the Arab Spring took off is because there was such a high concentration of young men between 18 and 29 who couldn't have sex in those cultures unless you got married. They had no prospect. They were all unemployed and they had no prospects for marriage. They had no prospects for sex. And as a result, they have no prospects for reproduction. So when you take that away from them, yeah, they're going to riot. Yeah, they're going to go overthrow the government because they have nothing left to lose at that
especially point. When they can't afford food, Rollo, and that's the exact same place that we're going now in the United States, where we've got this generation of males who can't get a date, let's say, and you're going to see food prices, according to Biden himself, we're going to see food shortages, therefore food prices increasing. And see an Arab type spring here in the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all connected. And if you think about these,
why do you think Antifa is a thing? Do you think they got jobs?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all civil unrest on both sides of the aisle. But you look at these narratives that we're seeing pushed by the mainstream media, by most politicians, and then by most all of the global elite. And there are narratives that maybe it's not their purpose, but the net result is still the same. And that's that women make decisions which lower the birth rate. And again, I'm not going to say whether that's bad or good. I'm just going to say there's trade-offs there. Mm-hmm. And men are making decisions which put them into a category where there's no way that they're going to be attractive to a female, especially a female that's going to exceed them in education, that's going to exceed them in their ability to make money and exceed them in their ability to make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two. You got to remember that there's two sides of like the hypergamous equation. Like I was saying before, like the beta buck side. Well, when women are looking for long-term security, they need long-term security from a life perspective a whole lot longer than they do. They have their most sort of sexually selective years where they can consolidate on that. So from that perspective, if you live in a society that has, from the time you were 5 years old through Disney, Pixar, popular media, music, whatever, like, you go girl kind of media. If you have been taught from a very early age that you can't trust men, they are ridiculous, they are incompetent, or they're borderline abusers. That's pretty much the narrative for masculinity in, Western societies right now, that you cannot trust men. So you have to do it yourself, young lady.
See, I think that you might be pushed by the global elite. And then that's kind of my hypothesis, my theory. And let's look at the Gillette commercial. remember though? I mean, I know you commented on those quite heavily. And, you always kind of scratch your head and wonder why all of these corporations are kind of ganging up on this idea of masculinity. Mm-hmm. And yet all of these corporations have connections with the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
What makes me scratch my head. You see where I'm going with that?
I do. And I focus on in my wheelhouse anyways, I focus on the narrative. I focus on when I remember when the Gillette commercial came out And I have a background in marketing and advertising and brand management and stuff. And so my initial impulse is, what agency did this, right? So I go and I look up the commercial and I have access to all that, you know, like the background, you know, what, who did it and who was responsible. And of course, the director of that commercial was this like notorious militant feminist who's done other, I think she did like some feminine hygiene commercials where like with singing like fruit that looks kind of like vaginas. And I was looking at this, I'm going, Gillette, really, for a men's product, this is who you decided you wanted to have. And there's a reason for that, because that's the narrative. That's what they think is the popular narrative going on right now. The woke narrative. And so they think that, you know, you get big name corporations who sign on with this, because the people who are in the agencies that they use are fresh out of the colleges, and they think that it's not just about making money, it's about, you know, social change, and this is the right thing to do, this is the right way to go, because they've been indoctrinated for so long to think that. And now those big corporations like Gillette, which is owned by Procter and Gamble, by the way, goes and says, that's a great idea. Gillette, who used to hire a team of like hot bikini models to go out to F1 racing, you know, shows and be there, be like arm candy for all the drivers and everybody else out there. Now that's not cool. Now we're going to have guys who look like idiots, you know, sitting by their barbecues and looking like they're like they know something. That's step one. The other step is this. If you go and you look at the APA, which is the American Psychology Association right now, which is the biggest name, I guess, in certified, you know, clinical psychology, they issue these sort of like, you know, philosophical decrees on how traditional masculinity is now a personality disorder. It's now scientifically proven that if you have some sense of like conventional masculinity, or you have you're a man being a man, you're not really being who you are. It's all in the authentic. And that comes back to the narrative that you were just talking about, which exactly. is, if we can find some way to disempower men and emasculate men, that makes them compliant. We need to keep them sedated. We need to find some way to, and if they're not sedated, we need to have them questioning what is real masculinity, what, or if it isn't, if they don't have any question, then masculinity is the devil. It has to be toxic. We have to find some way to qualify it. And consequently, you get Matt Walsh on Dr. Phil talking to the bearded lady on there not too long ago, asking what is a woman? And really what he's asking for is a concrete definition of what a woman is. Like that woman, who's the girl, the woman that's going to be that's nominated for the Supreme Court. Yeah, I mean, that's just a play on that as well. And I'm looking at that, I'm watching that. That's all part of that same narrative, because if they can keep you confused, or they can keep you self-loathing as a man, you'll that's a form of sedation. If you can't figure it out, you're just going to sit there and go, "Oh, I'll just define it for myself," because they don't want the Arab Spring. Yes, exactly. And again, yes, perfect example. They don't want a higher birth rate. They don't want you to take. They don't want you to own your shit. They don't want you to be like. They want to find some way to keep you sedated as best they can. And if they can't do it through pornography or through chemicals or whatever, they're going to do it through mindset. And that's really what they've been doing for a lot. That's where I come in. Right? Yeah. What it comes down to, just real quick, when I was talking about Matt Walsh talking to the bearded lady on Dr. Phil, what they're doing is he's trying to ask for a concrete empirical definition of what is a man and what is a woman. They're never going to answer that question, because the moment they do, they lose the argument. There's an okay, that's what a woman is. You ain't it. And it's a challenge to that identity that has been built up for the last, really since the 70s, as part of that same narrative. It comes back to social constructionism and the blank slate. If you take those away, then those forms of sedation go away too.
Yeah. See, and it's, I just hate to keep connecting dots, but you know, the World Economic Forum was set up in 1971. Mm-hmm. I mean,
when did the gold standard go out? When was the gold standard abolished?
1971.
Really?
Yeah. 1971. I just went on the World Economic Forum's website, their corporate partners, while you were talking mm-hmm. there. And sure enough, you know, Procter Gamble right there.
Right there. Yeah. Big multinational corporation. They own a lot of brands. When I was doing the research on that Gillette thing, I'm like, damn, they own all this.
Yeah. Because I, you know, as a entrepreneur or former entrepreneur myself, you know, I think about it through the lens of owning a business, and I see all of these men's companies just going woke if you will, and doing these commercials that make absolutely no sense to me whatsoever, because you're basically telling, you know, 50% of your audience that, hey, don't buy my product because I think you're a belligerent Neanderthal. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why would you do that from a business standpoint? None of this makes sense to me. Now, you know, that you see it through the influence, let's say, of the global elite, the World Economic Forum, kind of pushing this narrative, and then the corporate, those people that control the corporations being under that influence that you see. And not only that, but the kids in the advertising agencies being under the influence through the universities, which are influenced by the global elite and this postmodernist type of theories and ideas. And then you just really start to see how everything is connected. And it all goes back to what we were saying earlier with the population control.
Let me ask you, I'm going to throw something out here and you tell me if this makes sense. I'm actually asking you for your input on this. There was, I think it was like in 2019, maybe it was 2020. Whenever Captain Marvel came out and the movie just completely panned, or like if you have like these all female casts of like Ghostbusters, whatever it is, like we're trying to like find some way to keep this narrative of the strong, empowered, independent woman. Right. And, you know, Captain America bombed. I mean, considering, you know, Marvel movies and such. Now there was I was having discussions at that time. I'm saying Disney doesn't care if it bombs. They're not trying to make money with this. It can lose money. Now, do you think that's a real thing? Like they will actually, because they're so rich, they have so much money that it's no longer about producing a product or producing content that is in any way going to give them a return on the investment. It's more about getting the narrative out there. Do you think that multinational corporations will take a loss if it means that they're putting that narrative out?
I think it's worth thinking about. That's for sure. I don't think we can just easily dismiss it and say, oh, no, that's really not happening. When you look at it through the lens of what we were just talking about with these commercials that would decrease their bottom line. You know, why would you do? And it's not just a Gillette. I mean, we've seen countless companies do the exact same thing. And then, you know, so is it a stretch to think that a corporation wouldn't set up a movie that they knew would lose money just to push a specific narrative? I mean, you've got to look at it, you know, through their lens. If you truly believed that, you know, your kids and grandkids would not have a standard of living that was equal, not only to what we have today, but what we would have had maybe in the 1500s back in like the feudalist system. Yeah. If we continue to consume at this rate, and if the birth rate continued at the same trajectory, if that was your worldview, then, you know, would you say, hey, I'm willing to do this movie if it means, you know, kind of brainwashing society to do things, kind of putting the carrot in front of the horse, to manipulate them to do things that will lower the birth rate, therefore give my kids and grandkids a better future because the world as we know it will still exist. And this is just the, you know, I'm in a position of authority and I'm part of the global elite. And therefore I have the responsibility to make the hard decisions that other people just don't want to make. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this is a hard decision that, you know, do I want to lose money? Do I want to try to manipulate women and men to lower the birth rate in order to make sure that the human race will continue to survive hundreds of years into the future? You know, that's a tough decision, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make that decision because I feel like I am part of the chosen group. You know, I think that the World Economic Forum, the global elite, they feel as though they're kind of almost like godlike in a sense, that they're better than everyone else. Therefore, they should be making these decisions. Yes. And it's kind of destiny that they have been put into this role where they can kind of try to micromanage not only each individual society, but the global society and the global economy. And I'm just spitballing it here, but maybe that's the mindset.
The overarching theme of all of this.
Yeah.
I agree, but I'm going to agree with the asterisks on this. Okay. Because I've been asked this before. I think the last time I was asked this was when I was on You Are Here with Elijah Schaefer. And Elijah asked me, so who do you think it all is? Is it the elves? Is it the global cabal of evil Molech worshiping, baby eating, you know, Jeffrey Epstein loving, you know, Illuminati? And I'm like, well, you know, I'll let you guys go ahead and have your speculations on that. But I will say this is that none of that, even if there is, I don't think that there necessarily has to be, because I think that human beings are going to be human beings no matter what. So if you go and you say, hey, ladies, you can have sex without any responsibility. You don't have to be held accountable. You don't have to worry about judgmentalism anymore. You don't have to worry about being a single mom anymore. Hell, we hold them up as superheroes right now. All of those old stigmas go away. If you were to tell women of the 60s that this is the way it's going to be, of course, they're going to sign up for that. That's human self-interest. And so when we talk about lower fertility rates, when we talk about birth control, when we talk about, like I was saying, pornography and sedation, there's a reason why pornography is free online. OnlyFans, if you want to like have interaction with the girl, that's going to cost you a pretty penny. But if you just want to get off, you can do that for free right now. And there's a reason it's free, because it's sedation. And the only reason it's sedation is because the human machine works in a certain way. You put a naked girl in front of a guy, he's going to want to get off. He's going to want to be with that chick, right? You're going to disincentivize anything for him to make himself better. And it's not even so much a self thing. It's also about civilization. So we exist in this civilization right now because we had some smart beta male guys who wanted to find a way to do an end run around getting to status, getting to, you know, maybe either becoming bigger and buffer or whatever, or thinking of something like Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Steve Jobs. Those guys in the sexual marketplace, they're losers. But they're smart and they're clever and they figure out how to get status. And from that point, they can solve their reproductive problem. Take that away from a society and it stagnates. That's the problem with all of this, is if you're going to say, well, we're going to decrease the population, but you're also decreasing innovation as a result of that, because you're taking away the human machine. You're taking away the impetus that men are going to have to want to be creative, to want to think in novel ways. And the way they do that is because if I don't, I'm not going to get laid, and I'm not going to reproduce, and I might as well be dead because my genetic line is going to go extinct. I've got to find new and novel ways to, in some way, benefit society. And through doing that, I gain status and I solve my reproductive problem. And it all comes back full circle to my tenet anyways, is if you think that the Rockefellers are behind feminism, more power to you. But feminism doesn't work if the human machine isn't what it is. Pornography, free 4K streaming online, that doesn't work as a sedation unless human males are the way they are. And we're starting to see this decline in testosterone, and we're seeing, you know, like this systematic emasculation of men. And yes, do I see sort of like the code in the Matrix? You're damn right I do.
Yeah. And I think that they understand that hardwiring of the human condition, mm-hmm. and they're more than happy to leverage it, you know, to achieve those objectives we were talking about. But also, you know, when you're discussing innovation, it's circular, because if we don't have the innovation, then we don't have the increased life expectancy and potentially lower life expectancy. So not only are you pulling the handle on the birth rate, as far as decreasing it, but you're also pulling the handle on increasing the death rate because mm-hmm. you don't have that innovation, right?
For sure.
And it goes back to the dynamics between men and women, and just, you know, human beings being human beings. And we're trying to re-engineer that. They are trying to re-hardwire. And you know, I always think about it and like, why would they do that when they know it's going to be destructive? But when you look at it through the lens of, well, they truly believe that they have to destroy things to a certain level, if you want to look at the population that way, in order for the human race to survive long term, mm-hmm. then it starts to make a lot more sense.
Exactly. It's a controlled burn is what it is.
Yeah.
It's when they do deforestation, although certainly around here, right? Yeah, it's a controlled burn. You have to burn off the forest to make to make room for new growth, right? Or for more manageable growth, I guess. That might be a better way to describe it. But it's really what's called a controlled burn. I mean, in theory, anyways.
Yeah, Rollo. I know. I when I text Rollo this morning, guys, I said it's going to be about 20 minutes.
I thought you wanted to talk about Will Smith and Chris Rock.
Well, but that's
people asking me for that today too.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your opinion on that. But that goes back to the beta male stuff. You know, one thing that really struck me, I think I had a viewer, someone responded to a tweet or something that said Rolo called this because he said something. I'm sure you'll be able to correct me, but it's something to the effect of if Will Smith doesn't kill the beta male inside of him, the beta male will kill him or destroy
kill the beta
him
before it kills you. Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's kind
I'm
of,
about to, I'm I mean, about I really to, I'm done here. I'm about yet. To go over to my channel and talk about exactly that.
Okay. Well, we'll just leave that as a cliffhanger. So where can people go to check out that next live stream that you're going to
do? Sure. Well, you can just find me. I am at, just go look up The Rational Male on YouTube. You'll find me, or just type in Rolo Tomasi. You'll find my channel there. I have my channel, my main channel, and I have my Clips channel. So if you don't want to sit through a 4-hour live stream, you can always get the highlight reels from the Clips channel. So just saying that that's out there for you guys. You can also, if you have questions or you want to talk about it, or you want to read my books, by the way, all of them are available on Amazon. Just type in The Rational Male. You'll find all 4, soon to be 5. And I will also be at The Collective in May. And I will also be at Rebel Capitalist in June. So doing another workshop. So that's something to look forward to. And I will also be with Robert Kiyosaki on my birthday this week.
Our good friend Kiyosaki.
There you go.
Which channel is the live stream going to be on? Just right
on my main right now. It's on my main. It's actually on all my channels, but it'll be on the main here in probably about another 10 minutes or so. I'll have to go switch over. But okay. One last thing. I have a new Red Pill NFT that's coming out as well that I'm working with Rocky Sabo and Kevin Sabo.
Really?
We pushed it to the white list is open. If you want to get on the white list, I've talked about this before, but it's a Red Pill NFT, meaning that we're taking the funds that we make from the NFT and we're putting it into Red Pill projects to push against this narrative, one of which is a documentary that we're working on right now about the manosphere and the red pill and masculinity and all that good stuff. So that from our perspective rather than like somebody else's. So that's coming up, and we're taking the money from that NFT, like I said, and putting it into, I think, worthwhile projects that push up against exactly this narrative we were just talking about. So.
That's great. I think that's really the answer here. We just need to kind of fight fire with fire, so to speak.
I think so too.
And I really like what Shapiro is doing with what's his deal called, the Daily Mail or Daily Wire. Yeah, you know how they were sponsored by Harry's razors, which went totally woke like Gillette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they said, fine, F you. They kind of gave him the finger, and they started their own razor called Jeremy's razor. Huh. And it just went banana. They did their
I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah. And so I know they did a movie as well. To really start creating their own content. So, you know, if the World Economic Forum and the crazies that believe in that we need to depopulate the world or reduce consumption, if they want to create their own movies and control Hollywood, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But we'll just do it on our end as well and give people an alternative so we don't stay on this slippery slope to serfdom.
Exactly. Exactly. Human beings create culture. And if you don't like the culture, create your own. And that's exactly
there you what go, man.
That's all it's about. So,
yeah. All right, buddy. I appreciate your time, and I'm sure anytime. We'll talk to you soon.
Always want to talk to you, George. All right. Thanks a lot, man. We'll see you. All right, bye. Bye.